You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Welcome back here on New Hampshire Now with 91450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. I appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. And this segment of the show presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning. That's who my family trusts to call for all our plumbing, heat, and air conditioning needs. Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning at 641-6400. You can check them out online at paradigmph.com. Experience the paradigm shift. Joining us right now on the program, former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn from the great state of Oklahoma. He's written the book Smashing the D.C. Monopoly, and he is going to be in the Granite State on Tuesday, 7 o'clock at the Red Hook Brewery in Portsmouth. He joins us right now on the program to discuss the book. Senator Coburn, how are you?
I am great. I hope you are as well.
I am, and appreciate joining us for the program. This is a really important book. We have a show here on the station called Off the Record with former Congressman Paul Hodes, where he talks a lot about what goes on in D.C. and takes folks kind of inside what's taking place in D.C. An important thing has happened in Washington, D.C., you know, over the last 10, 20 years. While the nation has, for the most part, remained stagnant in regards to economic growth, particularly amongst the middle class, D.C. is flourishing, and business is great in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump went to Washington, D.C. in part promising to drain the swamp, but I've not really seen any evidence that indicates that's taking place, and that we're going to see a less productive Washington, D.C. for individuals who are making money down there.
Well, first of all, I don't think you can drain this swamp. That's why I left early. I left from my Senate position 2 years early. I term limited myself, but I saw after spending 10 years in the Senate that even when you show people and everybody agrees with you all the fraud and waste and duplication that's there, very few of them will stand up and have the courage to eliminate it, because even waste and stupidity has a constituency.
Right.
So the only thing you can do in Washington is put muzzles on the alligators. And the way you do that, our founders gave us a way to do that, and that's what Convention of States and Article 5 movement's all about. It's about restoring the balance of power between the states and the federal government, but also restoring the balance of power between Congress and the courts and the executive branch. Because what essentially has happened over the last 20 years, the Congress has given almost all its power to the executive branch, and what it didn't give, the courts gave away.
Mm-hmm.
And so our founders, as a matter of fact, Colonel George Mason stood up. The only thing that was never hotly debated in the Constitutional Convention was allowing states the right to call an amendments convention to limit the power, scope, and jurisdiction of the federal government and restore it to what was intended to do. And so that's right there in all the notes of the convention, what Madison wrote down. But it's also it's the subpart B of Article 5, which allows ways to amend the Constitution. And it's a sure bet that Washington isn't going to correct itself.
I think that, you know, I've mentioned this many times here on the program, there was a clear message sent in the last election. And whether you look at Bernie Sanders' candidacy, whether you look at Donald Trump's candidacy, the American people are moving beyond the point of just complacency and looking at Washington and saying, you know, we don't like this, it doesn't work, but, you know, whatever. People are becoming motivated, and, you know, if you look at the latest congressional approval, it's at 10%. It seems like the time is ripe for something to take place. I think that Americans view that Washington is broken, it is not working, it is not fixable, and they have heard over and over again from whether it's politicians at the local level, their local individuals running for Congress or Senate, and saying, we're going to go down to Washington, D.C., and we're going to fix it, and nothing happens, from presidential candidates like Barack Obama pledging, a significant change and an aspirational change to Washington, D.C., or Donald Trump, from a different perspective, promising something that was very, very similar. So what do you, in your view, is it going to take for, you know, the American people, and particularly the middle, where, you know, the left and the right are always motivated and active for their particular ideological beliefs. But what is it going to take for the middle to get behind something like this, in particular, given the fact that there is not, you know, the type of civic engagement and knowledge necessary amongst the general electorate to even comprehend what you're talking about with an Article 5 of the Constitution convention?
Well, I think, first of all, if you look at the research, especially Pew's research on what people's attitudes are towards Washington, people are already disgusted. And you know, it's over 90% of America doesn't trust Washington anymore. So identifying that and then offering the solution. So you raise a great point. Most middle-income Americans haven't seen a true increase in their standard of living in 15 years. I mean, there's been, if you look at median family income, it's actually the same as it was in 1989 in real dollars. So the question is action. And what's so pernicious about where we are, we have $124 trillion, that's key, $1 trillion in unfunded liabilities are going to come due in the next 50 years. And we have $20 trillion and soon to be $21 trillion worth of unfunded liabilities, and none of the accounting out of Washington is honest. And so how do you motivate people to think about the future of their kids? And the way I've found to do it is talk to seniors. You really don't want to have any adjustment to Medicare, even though you know it's going to hamstring your grandkids. Is that really true? Do you really not love your grandkids anymore? And then I sit down and go through with them. Here's what has to happen if your grandkids aren't going to live in poverty. And pretty soon they start saying, you know, I'm really not that selfish. I think we can fix Medicare and Social Security and still meet our commitments. But here's the question. Who's working on that in Washington?
Right.
They're all working to say, how do I make the other side look worse, right, rather than where's the visionary leadership of how we solve the real problems of our country? And that's why I left, because nobody's working, or very few are working on the real problems. They're using the symptoms to advance their own political careers rather than actually address the real problems of our country. And I think one of the most honorable things that can happen to you as a politician is to stand up for the right thing in the long term for our country, even if it means you lose your seat, because you will have done and fulfilled the oath that you signed, that you took. Most members of Congress violate their oath every day that they're in Washington, because they're passing bills that they have no authority under the Constitution to pass.
You look back at when Washington, in my view, last worked to some effect, and that was in the mid-90s, and the budget was balanced, and it seemed that the attitude amongst individuals like John Kasich or John Sununu here from New Hampshire and serving in Congress was to just get things done and roll up their sleeves and to not really care too much about the next election and let the chips fall where they may, where the motivation, it appears now, is becoming a lifetime senator, a lifetime member of Congress, and that's one of the problems. But going back to your discussion about entitlements, and the concern that I think a lot of older Americans or middle-class Americans have is they just, as we referenced before, they just don't trust Washington. So they say, okay, I'm going to get a little bit less now, or we're going to make changes to Medicare, but that's just going to go to another program. That's going to go to the military. You're just going to cost shift to another area. Or they believe that there isn't really a problem with entitlements. When all is said and done, we'll just borrow more. Just like we see with the raising of the debt ceiling every year to 6 months or to 3 months, the most recent example, and we'll just borrow again. There's never going to be a time when America is insolvent and unable to meet its obligations, because, heck, we're America.
Well, look at the value of the dollar today as it was 12 months ago. People are recognizing this. The first time that a bond issue isn't fully subscribed, that we're history. And the fact is that nobody knows when that's going to happen, but everything continues the way it does until it doesn't. That's why I say that Article 5 amendment is so important. Remember, one of the things we're proposing is a balanced budget amendment using general accepted accounting principles.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have to account for things just like everybody else does, rather than cheat like the CBO and OMB do every year. So if in fact that happens, that forces members of Congress to have to make hard choices, which they're refusing to do today. They don't want to make the hard choice because they might not keep their powerful, wonderful position. So what we ought to be doing is, how do we make Congress, how do we give them a spine? How do we get them to make the hard choices that are needed for which we can survive as a republic? You know, everybody thinks everything's just going to be fine.
Right.
Well, there's a great book out there called This Time It's Different. It's written by Ken Rogoff and Carmen Reinhart, two renowned economists. What you're calling it, if you read the book, it's not going to be different. We're going to have the same consequences happen to the United States that happened to every other country that spent more than it did and spent money they didn't have on things they didn't absolutely have to have. And when there's $400 billion fully documented waste, duplication, and fraud in the federal government every year, and you can't get members of Congress to clean that up, that tells you what kind of problem we have. So what we have to have is we have to give them a spine. And when the career politician comes home to Maine or New Hampshire and they'll say, well, I had to because there's a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, means I had to make a hard choice. Here's the choice I made.
I agree. I think, as I mentioned before, it's been a long time for a balanced budget amendment, and Washington should be required to live within its means, because the spending doesn't make sense. The spending is, in very many cases, duplicitous, and we need to have some control of this. This hour of the program is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and this segment of the show brought to you by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, because, you know, I think one of the big questions that the folks have is they look at Washington, they look at even Concord in terms of state government, and, you know, they wonder, how is their tax money spent? And, you know, when there is a need for to reach out to government, it's very often, you know, difficult, particularly in one of the larger bureaucracies, not necessary for to get a constituent services from a senator or for a congresswoman or congressman. But they say, you go to a federal building and you look at it and you're like, well, this is, we're paying for this. We're paying for, you know, antiquated ways of customer service, antiquated websites, antiquated and bureaucratic programs. And when you actually need help, it's a big process. And a lot of times you need a senator or a senator's office or a congressman or congresswoman's office to navigate the process for you. And despite the fact that government is, you know, in terms of revenue brought in, is the biggest business going, it doesn't act like one in terms of being able to provide for constituent services. And a lot of people wonder, well, where does the money go? Where does the tax money go? Where does all this spending go? Because a lot of people making a lot of money off of this situation, and they're not sure who is.
Well, it's easy. I wrote a book called The Debt Bomb. I outlined $9 trillion you could eliminate over 10 years. It's easy to see where it goes. When the average federal employee makes twice what the median family income is in this country, when they have the best retirement package of anybody in the world, save high-level CEOs, when we have more employees than what we need and we have very ineffective, I mean, just think about the VA. We threw money at the VA like crazy, and still the quality is not there. And that's because there's no leadership and no accountability. And the only way you ever solve a lot of this problem is you have to challenge incumbency in Congress and say, hey, get up there and do the right thing. Don't get up there and try to stay. And so, our founders never thought we would see this kind of long-term political service. First of all, because they couldn't do it and manage their affairs. Number two is they believed in what was called rotation in office. And the only one that verbally spoke out against term limits in the whole Founding Father movement was Alexander Hamilton, who didn't even vote on the Constitution as a representative from New York. So we have myriad of problems. The way to solve the problems, though, is to restore the intent of the original Constitution in terms of enumerated powers. What Washington is doing today, they've squandered and then stolen the power from the states. And they've been helped to do that by the courts. And the fact is the best government you can have is the one that's closest to you because you can have the most impact on it as a citizen. And, you know, 60% of your decisions in your state aren't made by you. They're made by a bureaucrat in Washington that's controlling money coming to your state.
That's Tom Coburn joining us here on Hampshire Now, 1-9-1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. Former U.S. Senator from the state of Oklahoma. He's written Smashing the D.C. Monopoly, and he's a senior advisor to the Convention of States, speaking on how we the people can use Article 5 of the Constitution to restore the balance of power between the states and federal government, coming up on Tuesday the 12th, and that is at 7 p.m. at the Red Hook Brewery in Portsmouth. He's going to be there from 7 to 8:30 p.m. What, in your view, will take for something of this nature to take place? Because, you know, whenever we talk about reform, and just reform in terms of government, whether it's reform to the healthcare system, whether it's reform to the immigration system, tax reform, or anything of that nature, the entrenched interests that are doing so well as a result of the monopoly that's been set up fight back. And those interests obviously do not want to see a change to this system. So how does something like this work?
Well, that's really interesting. They're actually helping us every day to continue to act the way that they're doing. We have 2.3 million volunteers. We have a volunteer representative of every legislative district, state legislative district in the country now in place. We have a massive grassroots effort that's growing every day at conventionofstates.com. And the way we do that is to continue to hold accountable. We have 12 states that have passed this Article 5 Amendments Convention request. I expect at the end of this year we'll be at 20, at the end of this next year, next legislative session, be at 20. We don't have to get to 34. As soon as Congress sees us getting close, they're going to start making the hard decisions. They're going to start doing what we're calling for. We're calling for three things. One is fiscal responsibility, a balanced budget amendment with generally accepted accounting principles. What every other American has to do, Congress doesn't have to do. Limitation on scope and jurisdiction. What has happened is the federal government has taken power away from the states through both the courts and through the Congress not honoring the enumerated powers, and restoring that back to the states where we can actually have some influence. You know, I can actually go and talk to my state representative or my state senator, but as a U.S. senator of 4 million people, very few people could come talk to me. I answered their letters. I did town halls all the time, but still, as a percentage of the population, it's minimal. So the fact is if we move the decision-making where it was intended to be, then what we'll do is we'll get better response. And will there be divergences throughout the country? Sure, New Hampshire is different than Oklahoma. There's lots of differences. But the fact that every major thing that's dividing us in this country today was decided by a 5-4 decision of the Supreme Court rather than Congress acting within the powers that were given to it by our founders tells you one of the reasons why we're seeing the division that we see in our country.
I think you make tremendous points. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is healthcare. And, you know, we're seeing a bipartisan approach taking place in D.C. This week and perhaps into next to try to, quote unquote, solve health care. And what's interesting is that there's such a small percentage of Americans that are actually, affected directly by the Affordable Care Act or by Medicaid expansion. But this is a classic, play by D.C. where they're making it seem as though they're actually changing healthcare. A, this is insurance, and it's not actual healthcare. And as a former doctor, you'll be able to speak to this hopefully with some tremendous expertise. But the healthcare system is what needs to be addressed, and whether that's cost controls, tort reform, whatever. The problem is the system in its entirety. So DC goes after is the creating an exchange via the Affordable Care Act, heavily subsidized, in order to try to address pre-existing conditions and to help individuals who have difficulty in gaining access to insurance, but does not actually go after the key issue, which is the cost of health care.
Well, I agree. But that's not anything different than what Washington usually does. They treat symptoms rather than the disease.
Right.
And the disease in America is we pay about 35% more than we should be paying for health care. And there's several studies. The latest was 6 or 7 years ago by Thomson Reuters that said between $800 billion and $1 trillion of what we spend on health care every year doesn't help anybody get well. Mm-hmm. And doesn't prevent anybody from getting sick. So we ought to say, well, how is that the case? How did we get there? And it's really simple. It didn't get there. It's just like why we're failing in education. Every other limited resource that we have in the country, we have price discovery on, and people make choices based on price and quality. We don't do that in healthcare. We have prepaid insurance plans that we pay a tremendous premium for them to pay our bills, and there's no incentive for them to control costs because if the costs go up, all they do is raise premium. So what needs to happen is true price discovery. And as I travel around the country, I want to tell you this is happening. In 5 years, the amount of technology that's going to be available to the individual to find out where to buy the health care for the best price with the best quality is going to be available on everybody's iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening right now. There was a study that was released from Brookings as well as AEI and several other groups sponsored by the large healthcare funded foundation that said that about 20% of our excess costs are because of the big hospital chains and nonprofit chains that have vertically and horizontally integrated. That they add costs. And here's the great example. There's an app out there that's sold to businesses right now. It'll eventually be sold to the average citizen. It shows you if you need an MRI, where you can get that MRI at the best value with the best quality. And the differential between a large hospital where it costs $3,700 to have an MRI and an outpatient imaging center where it costs $500, that 700% difference is where we're driving inefficiency in the big hospitals and efficiency in the small operations. So they recommend antitrust on the hospitals. This is Brookings. This isn't some conservative think tank. They recommend elimination of certificate of need. They recommended transparency in terms of price and quality. And so the only thing Washington really needs to do in healthcare is get out of the way and mandate that everybody that is in the healthcare publish your prices. We don't want the federal government doing tort reform. And let me tell you why. Because it may sound good in terms of medical malpractice, but when the federal government then starts deciding what's a tort in New Hampshire and Oklahoma, mm-hmm. we're in trouble. So the fact is markets. And people say, well, what about the people who are falling through the cracks? Well, what I would put forward to you is every government program that's running right now that has to do with healthcare, people are falling through the cracks. Just go to a VA hospital or Indian healthcare hospital. Look at the people on Medicaid who say they have access but can't get into a doctor. And look at the studies that show, especially out of the Oregon study, that show if you have Medicaid and you require hospitalization, your outcome will be worse than somebody that didn't have any insurance at all. So you know, this panacea that Washington can solve, what can solve it is transparent markets where people have to make choices. And then we help those people who really need our help.
Right. I mean, you're 100% right with in regards to health care. The problem is the fact that individuals are unable to access health care because of the cost of health care and creating, you know, more insurance and more bureaucracy in order for them to be able to access it is not truly accessing healthcare. And
it hadn't worked. We have more people. It's interesting when you hear people talk about the Affordable Care Act, all these people got insurance. Well, most of them got 80% of them got Medicaid, right? That's not insurance. that's a government-run program that reimburses at about half the rate of everything else, where you can't get access when you need to is when you're really sick. Because there's not enough physicians and physician extenders caring for Medicaid population. So, you know, first of all, it's the worst of ironies to tell somebody, I'm going to give you Medicaid, and then you can't get a doctor to see you. Or if you can get a primary care, you can't get a specialist. So what have we done? What we're doing is we're creating a game. We can, in fact, with what we're spending on healthcare in this country, with true allocation resources that's not by some central planner in Washington, we can actually markedly improve the care and markedly lower the cost. And I would predict to you, Chris, that in 10 years, you're going to see the cost of healthcare about 35% lower than what it is right now.
Senator
in real dollars.
Senator Coburn, appreciate joining us for the program, and best of luck with what you're doing in regards to the Convention of the States in Article 5, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, conventionstates.com.
Stamps Now here on 139, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate joining us for the program. This hour of Hampshire Now is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health, and that segment of the show presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, and ParadigmPH.com. Experience the paradigm shift. We'll come back with more after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now.
Billy Man, come on. 6 o'clock news says somebody been shot. Somebody's been abused. Somebody blew up a building. Somebody stole a car. Somebody got away. Somebody didn't get too far. Yeah, they didn't get too far.
Grandpappy told my pappy back in my day, son, a man had to answer for the wicked that he done. Take all the rope in Texas, find a tall oak tree, round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street, for all the people to see.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.